We're in the second chapter, and on Mishnah 18, the words of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon is described earlier as one of the five students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who is a Yerechat, fierce Zen. And when he was asked by his Rabbi, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Tzu'uru, go out and see a pathway, a way in which a man should conduct himself. What is a primary mantra? What should be a primary goal in life? What am I looking for? What's my mission statement in order to secure a good grip on the road to the world to come? So Rabbi Shimon said, the most important thing is to be Royas Anailat, to see the outcome of our deeds, because as we are cloaked and housed in our finite body that takes predominance over the soul, the conscience, the inner compass, we're constantly being led off the road of life. And we need to constantly realign ourselves, and it's very difficult. The body pulls us off the road to the worlds to come. There's a straight highway that leads across all the interesting terrain of life. If we peg in the end destination and we focus on getting there, we get there. But unfortunately, our GPS constantly jumps to local attractions. And we're always diverted off the road of life. And we look for all kinds of distractions. Because when we look straight ahead, we're looking into the next world, eternity. OMG, what's that all about? Heavens, here in this world, I know I got my comfort zone, I got my channels, TVs, I've got my iPhone, I've got all my little things that I am attached to, that I'm comfortable with, that, you know, I know who I am, and I know what my struggles are, but I know what my little things that tickle my body, and I feel comfortable here. The next world, heavens, what's that all about? My soul is going to connect to the divine. There's no physical pleasure. It's scary. But if I am a yirechet, if I am afraid of sin, I realize that on both sides of the road there is an electrical fence. I can get electrocuted. It's dangerous. Amroya, I see as Hanoilad the outcome, the potential outcome and heavy loss that will be incurred by chait, sin. And the word chait really means missing the mark. Chet lematara is the bull's eye of an arrow when it hits its mark. And so, amachti es hamatara, the Gemara uses that expression, meaning to say there's a void, I missed the mark. Here I am, I'm supposed to be focused on the end goal, eternity, real values, living for real, seeing that my soul ultimately is going to be bonded for eternity with the divine, and my body will just disintegrate. There's nothing left of all this. And it won't even take with a pair of socks. There's nothing to take along. Nothing. I love to say that. Because they say, there's a story that's circulated of a very wealthy man. This story went around about 2 years ago. 3 years ago. A very wealthy man in Queens who passed away. And he left a tzava'a, a will, instructing his children to bury him not only in shrouds, but also in his socks. It was a very, very strange thing to write in his will. And it was so strange, but we know that halachically, a person is buried only in shrouds. Don't put into the grave anything. There are certain exceptions. There are Holocaust survivors that wanted to make sure that they had in the grave, in the coffin, you know, that was their schus, they come to the world to come. Look, God, look what I suffered for your Jewish, for Judaism. There are people that I've seen were buried with the Sefer Tehillim that they said, or there's something that they're buried in a coffin that's made from their shtender, from the place where they learned, the table that they studied on, so it should serve as a sort of a merit in the world to come. There are, but we don't bury a mace, a deceased, with anything other than shrouds and a talus with the corner cut off. And so this fellow said, I'm sorry, my Savoyan is well. He said, I must be buried with socks. And of course, there was strangest request. But they went to the Rav, and the Rav says, I know that the man requested that, and that's what he wrote. It's his specific instructions. But you can't bury him in socks. I'm sorry, halacha mandates. And now that his soul has moved on, he knows the truth, and he follows the halacha, don't bury him. And anything other than what halacha mandates, just the simple shrouds. At the end of Shiva, they were going through his desk and they found an envelope tucked in the back. And on the envelope, it was written to be open after the Shiva. And his three sons opened the envelope, and in it, the father wrote, look, my dear sons, you wanted to bury me with my socks. And you saw, you went, I'm sure you asked the halacha mandates that you can't be buried in your socks. You see, my sons, you can't take anything with to the next world. I leave you a big inheritance, but always remember, it is only a tool to do good with it and to provide for your families. Don't let it intoxicate you. Something to that effect. Wow. That was a good message. In other words, if we're looking at the end destination in life, we stay focused and we realize that everything in life, the body is an accessory. Our material possessions are accessories. And if we allow ourselves to be distracted and we get a little high on the accessories, then we get into trouble. We lose sight of the long end destination. And there are consequences. So Rav Shimon is described as the Reichet. He was always afraid of missing the mark, of losing sight of the end destination. And that was precisely because, as was his motto, to be Roya Es Hanoilad. He saw the potential outcome. And it's the hardest thing. In America today, we're a very materialistic society. And so we see, we want, we must have, and we must have it instantly. And so if, God forbid, today we had to go back 15, 20 years and our internet connection was on a 128K modem. None of you remember that, do you? That was from the Stone Ages. If our computer takes a minute to get start up, we climb out of our box. We can't handle it. We implode. We need to have it now, streaming live, instant, at the touch of a button. Press the iPhone and we're right there. And we expect it. We deserve it. We each have our own individual Bill of Rights. And my rights tell me that if I need it, and I want it, I deserve it, I have it now. And I swipe my plastic card and I get it. But 1 second, that plastic card, you don't have great credit and it's at 23.99% interest. How do you think you're gonna climb out of that card? Doesn't matter, let the debts mount. I need it, I must have it. I need it now. Now, of course, going into Best Buy and buying the latest plasma screen or the latest phone, gizmo, gadget, whatever it is, that's small stuff compared to when people need, want, and must have things that are really unhealthy and have an addictive capacity to them. But the body acclimates itself and it must have. And we can't think and superimpose the mind over the body. We can't think long term. We only think short term. And so the great Bali Musa, they say something very fascinating. They say Pari had a dream. And in his dream, he sees seven big fat cows coming out of the river, and then he sees seven scraggly thin poor cows coming out, and these seven scraggly cows, they swallow up the big cows, and Velonoda Kiboel Kibena, it's not recognizable. They still remain these little emaciated thin cows. And he has another dream with the wheat. And of course, he asks everybody, nobody knows. He asks Yosef, and Yosef says, I have the answer to your dream. Elokim Yana Shloim Paroi. And he tells him from God what the Pesorin is, what the answer to his dream is. There's 7 years of plenty, big fat cows. And then there's 7 years of famine. And when the 7 years of famine are going to come, nobody will even remember the years of prosperity and plenty, because they will be so powerful, the famine will completely eat up the land. Everybody will be clinging on to the little bit of food that they have. They'll be in survival mode. Nobody will be able to even think of the times, the good times that were in the 7 years of plenty. And now, says Yosef to Paroi, he gives him unsolicited advice. And now, says Yosef to Paroi, Yera Paroi, let Paroi appoint an ish novoin v'chocham, a wise and deep man, understanding man, and he should place storehouses across the land, and they should gather in grain in the years of plenty and put it away for the years of famine. And Paroi wakes up from his listening, and he wakes up from his reverie, from his like stupor, and he jumps out. He says, wow, hanimsa kazeh ish novin v'chacham b'chaleres Mitzrayim, is there anybody in the whole land of Egypt that's as wise as you? You're the man. And right there, he appoints him to become the most powerful man in Egypt, the viceroy of Egypt. Now, to us, this is absolutely mind-boggling. You know, you want to come and be vetted for a CEO post in a Fortune 500 company. You want to take over Microsoft. Do you know, you have to work through the ranks, and they know you, and then they make forensic background checks. And then after they finally agree to take you, the lawyers haggle out the compensation package. It takes 2 weeks till you even can get a contract on the table. And here, Paroi appoints him to viceroy like that. What's going on? And the commentaries explain, he saw Yosef was wiser than everybody else. It goes much deeper. I'm just giving you an outline, obviously. But he saw there was a quality that Yosef possessed that wasn't there in the land of Egypt. The land of Egypt was a land, like in America, a land of plenty, for all intents and purposes. Kigan Hashem Keretz Mitzrayim, the fertile Nile Delta, produced bountiful crops. The Torah describes the ancient Egypt as it was obviously the most powerful, the cradle of the most powerful civilization at the time, but certainly it was a land of plenty. It was a very powerful country. And when there is an abundance, we indulge. And it's very, very difficult to see tomorrow. While the times are rolling and they're good, we fly high and we can't think of squirreling away for tomorrow, because we think naturally, as we're enjoying life, it's going to last. That's the way the body operates. To be able to transcend the body and put mind over body, even though the body is experiencing such an abundance, so much pleasure, so much excitement, to be able to think rationally for the long term, that takes a chacham, a wise person, a novin, someone who understands one thing from the other and is able to implement. And the fact that Yosef suggested this made Paroi understand that Yosef had the element of discipline. He was a person who feared sin, who saw consequence. He was Roya Es HaNoled. He saw the outcome, the long-term planning. Here we need a very wise, long-term planner, because when there's plenty, it's so hard to be disciplined and to make storehouses and to tax yourself and to limit your indulgence, because tomorrow you're going to need for your retirement portfolio. What do you mean? Right now I'm earning a fantastic wage, $1 million a year. Just think for my retirement. And so we see all the people who get rich fast and who have lots of money and they live a celebrity lifestyle and they were never trained in financial planning. They live a profligate life. We see time and time again the people that win the lottery.
Miserable.
Miserable and end up as paupers. They blow it. Because it's extremely difficult to put mind over body. It takes a lot of training. One has to be a yirei chet. One has to be able to stay focused on the road. And so that was the power of Rav Shimon. Now let's see what Rav Shimon tells us in his three tidbits of advice that reflect that essential characteristic. Mishnah Yud Ches. Rav Shimon says, Heve Zohar, be very careful. Heve Zohar, be very particular. Zohar means, Zohar is to shine. Shine, the inner shine. Heve Zohar means be careful. Zihirut in Ivrit. Warning. Heve Zohar, be very careful. Be Kriyas Shema Utfila, with Kriyas Shema and Tfila, because Kriyas Shema and Tfila have parameters and boundaries surrounding them. There's a specific prescribed time when one has to say Kriyas Shema and Tfila. Kriyas Shema we're allowed to say for the first 3 hours of the day. B'shachbacha, when you lie down, uvkumecha, and when you get up, and the Gemara teaches us, uvkumecha, when you wake up, is the first 3 hours of the day. That's the time when people are still waking up. And then there's a time for tefillah, for morning prayers, which is prescribed, of course, as we know, for a third of the day, shortly thereafter. And a person can say to himself, well, I'm communicating with Hashem. I love Hashem, but I have to ask Hashem Elokecha, I'm saying my Shema, you should love Hashem your God. I'm sure Hashem doesn't need me to superimpose all these strictures and rituals with my Shema, with my tefillah, my prayer. It's a personal dialogue with God. The door's open. If it's limited to a specific time, right away, I have to have discipline around it, but that is contrary to the essence of prayer. Isn't prayer more a spontaneous connection to God? Isn't it me pouring out my heart? Isn't it me connecting? I'm sure God accepts me for the way I am. And so Rav Shimon says no. The foundation of every relationship is parameters and boundaries. It has to be that way. It has to be that way. It's like a child. We give children tremendous love. But they have to know that there are certain boundaries as to what is acceptable and what is not. And if we overindulge them, it's not only we're spoiling them, but we're going to suffer because they won't appreciate us. They take us for granted and the relationship will disintegrate. A relationship, a healthy relationship, has to have boundaries and parameters. As we've said before, when the Gemara explains the mitzvah of love your neighbor like yourself, the Gemara says, "Mad aloch sani." What to you is distasteful, les chavroch lo savid. Don't do it to your friend. In other words, the essence of a relationship is that I want to protect my friend from things that I wouldn't want done to myself. That's the basis. That's the foundation. There's yira, there's fear. When there's respect and there's fear, on that we can build love. And I will share with you a little bit deeper what I believe in the Shema lies the basis of all essential, healthy human relationships, and particularly a husband and wife. Because a husband and wife, as we know, are one neshama. And the Gemara says that husband and wife living in shalom is fulfillment of the pasuk v'ahavta l'reacha kamoicha, love your neighbor like yourself, which is kol haTorah kula. In order for me to be close with Hashem, there are four things that are outlined in the Shema. Four important, critical characteristics that I need to imbibe that are written in the Shema. The first thing is, what's the first pasuk of the Shema? Shema Yisrael. Listen, Yisrael, that's me, the Jew. The Yisrael inside of me, I have to listen, I have to understand, I have to allow it to penetrate. What am I allowing me to penetrate? Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Hashem, my God, Hashem is one. Hashem is the God of when he manifests himself with love, with kindness. Elokeinu is when he manifests himself with judgment. It's all one. Everything that happens flows from one source. We live in a disintegrated, a fragmented world, and all different things are happening. We know it's all flowing from one source. At the top, it's all flowing from God. So the first thing is what we call Yichud Hashem. Echad. Hashem is one. We recognize Yichud Hashem. We're one with Hashem. Everything flows from Hashem. The second thing that we say in the Shema is Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso Le'olam Vaed. Blessed is the honor and the glory of his kingdomship forever and ever. So in that Baruch Shem is the obligation to give honor and respect to Hashem. Kavod. The third thing that's written in the Shema is V'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha. V'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha. You should love Hashem your God. How do we love Hashem your God? B'chol levavcha, with all your thoughts. B'chol nafshcha, with every fiber of your being. You're willing to give up your life. B'chol mo'edecha, with all your resources. I love Hashem. That's the next thing. Ahava, love. And the fourth thing that the Shema talks about is we're supposed to study the Torah when we wake up, when we go to sleep, when we walk in the street, when we're at home, wherever we are. We put the words of Torah on the doors of our homes. The fourth thing is we study Torah. First it says, V'ahavta Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha u'b'chol nafshecha u'b'chol ma'idecha v'hayu hadvarim ha'eleh. Let these words of Torah be al levavecha, on your heart. V'shinantum levanecha, teach it to your children. V'dibatabam, speak about them wherever you go. V'dibatabam. Engage. Think. What does Hashem want? What does Hashem want? I want to study his Torah wherever I go. In all circumstances, I'm connected. I'm thinking, what does he want? And if we think about it, this is precisely the four principles of marriage. This is what makes a marriage work. Number one.
This is the only one.
The only one. If I am flirting, thinking, entertaining, fantasizing about anyone else, I'm compromising and diluting the relationship. I have to know my soul and her soul. We're one soul in Shemayim. And everything else is off the radar screen. Doesn't exist. That's why in religious circles, they look with such disdain at materials that flaunt or broadcast models, women who are dressed provocatively, because all of this dilutes our relationship with Hashem, but it dilutes our ability to have a genuine, true, real, adoring relationship with our one and only, with what we call in America our better half. Because we always want to think, the best, ideal at least, is to want to give the best for the other. So the first is Echad. That's Yichud, just like with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's Yichud Hashem. Hashem gives us in this world an arena in which we can exercise and implement and internalize in real life all the principles that we need to then transfer to our relationship with Hashem. This world, as we've said many times, the material world that we live in, is a parallel to the spiritual world. And everything we see, even a simple tree, gives us insight into the big world, the spiritual world, that's outside of us. So, the first and foremost is, to make a relationship work, yichud. It's just you. Nothing else exists. Nothing else tempts me or allures me. That's the primary foundation of the relationship. The second primary, yesod of the relationship is, well, what do we think in America? What's the first thing? What in contemporary society, what is the number one thing in a relationship?
Respect.
Yeah. Well, come on, let's talk real.
Beauty.
Love! It's all about love. Because it's all about me. Feeling the excitement and the romance. That's not a real relationship. A real relationship, love is only as meaningful and as real as it's grounded in respect. If there's respect for the other person, then there's genuine love. If there's no respect, then the love is really an exercise in self-gratification. And you are the vehicle for me to feel high on love that makes me feel good. But that's not real. So the second thing with Hashem, you see, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchusai, honor. Respect, number two. The third thing, love Hashem with all your heart, with all your might, with all your resources. Because I recognize the greatness of Hashem and everything flows from Him. And I respect Him with everything. I want to give all the honor. I'm a subject and He's the King. And the greatest privilege I have is to give Him that respect. Then I can love. And the love is meaningful and it's real. And then the fourth thing is, I want to consistently maintain a bond and a real connection and a growing connection with Hashem. So I constantly want to understand better and better. What does He have in mind? What's He thinking? What's His words? What's He thinking? And so the next thing is v'dibar to bond. Speak in the words of Torah wherever you go. Think in the words of Torah. And so, the next thing in a marriage relationship is, what do you want? What can I do for you? I'm at work now. Can I do something that is going to be beneficial? Can I make a little call? Just, hi, how you doing? Everything. V'dibar tovam! Then there's a real relationship. What do you want? Not what do I want. So, in a sense, our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mirrored and is reinforced through our interpersonal relationships. Love your neighbor like yourself, love your friend like yourself, love your partner like yourself. Ani Hashem. I am Hashem. And maybe we can add, the Pasuk says, Ani Hashem, because the purpose of our existence down here is to take the Ani, the I, the ego, and transform it into Hashem. What do you want? I want to be one with you eternally, bonded, my soul and your soul, one. Part of the heavenly throne. I want to be reconnected back to my source. The avenue to reconnect to the source is to forge real relationship down here, to be able to surrender and minimize all the interference of the body that rears its ugly head and constantly screams its egotistical and narcissistic needs, doesn't allow for a genuine bonding. Okay, so we gave a little bit of a broader outline to the Zohar B'Kriyas Shema B'Tefillah. We went a little bit off, and there's a whole Mishnah here that we want to study, and we're running already at the end of our class. So let's see if we can move ahead a little bit faster, and maybe tomorrow we'll come back to this, because the next words of Reb Shimon are very important, but let's just at least read the words. Or Kasha'ata Mispalo, Reb Shimon continues, that when you daven, Al ta'as tefilascha keva. Do not make your tefillah something of a fixed nature. Because if I'm in disciplined mode, and I've got specific times associated with my prayer, so I'm going to daven like in a very programmed, cold way. And Rav Shimon says, no, you have to balance the foundation, the parameters is discipline, but it has to be balanced with love. Ella, rather, make your prayer rachamim v'tachnunim, a beseeching of rachamim, of mercy, v'tachnunim, and supplications, lifnei hamakom, before the Almighty. Shenema, as it is written, ki chanim v'racham hu, for God is a merciful and loving and graceful Hashem. Erech apayim, he's slow to anger, v'rav chesed, he has an abundant source of kindness, v'nichem al ara, and he is consoled, v'nichem, and he is relentful of punishment. He's not going to punish, he'll hold back, v'nichem al ara. But we have to want to connect him. So there's a balance of two, which we're going to talk about a little bit tomorrow. There's a tightrope walk in every relationship between boundaries, parameters, discipline, and love. And then the third thing he says, five words, but very powerful words. V'al tehi rasha b'fnei atzmacha. Do not be wicked in your own eyes. We mustn't succumb to the temptation that says, God, you can't like me. I'm a dreck. I'm a schmuck. I'm a nobody. Look at all the bad things that I've done. I know myself. And we all know the skeletons that are hanging in our own closet that we don't want anyone else to see. But that's not where we're supposed to be. Al tihi rasha. Don't be a rasha b'fnei asmacha. And we'll talk more about that tomorrow. And we'll gain an appreciation and an understanding how the skeletons in the closet are really all part of an integral, beautiful picture that is me. And they all contribute to the opportunity, unique opportunity, that I am bequeathed every single day by the divine to be able to realize my potential and my unique mission in this world. So I should never label myself a Rasha, because when we label ourselves one way, we are going to fulfill our own prescription of who we are. Self-fulfilling prophecy, absolutely. But if we see ourselves as tzaddikim, as the Pasuk says, V'amech, and your people, kulam tzaddikim, every Jew is a tzaddik, then we'll be able to be and live it for real. And we'll just end off as I close. Yesterday, see the beauty of the Jewish people. Sounds a little strange, but in Israel, in Netanya, unfortunately, there's a growing underworld in Israel. And there was one gang that was out to get another gang, I don't know what. But they had some explosives that they were probably going to strap under the other guy's car. And they were driving in their car with these explosives in the back of the car. And I guess they weren't so well-versed or learned, or the timer went off beforehand. And their car became a grave, these two gang chiefs. And the car burst into a ball of flame. And it was a residential neighborhood just yesterday or the day before. And everybody heard this massive explosion in the street. The windows rattled. Everybody came running out. The car was engulfed in fire. And they heard from the car screams and screams, Shema Yisrael, Shema Yisrael, again and again and again, until the bodies, of course, were consumed. And it was quite a gripping narrative. You could see, you know, these people screaming, Shema Yisrael. Now you think to yourself, these two fellows were out to go and bust their opposition or whoever it was. They were out to kill someone. Now, how low can you possibly fall? But, you know, people get caught in the web and ensnared in a whole rivalry and political. Don't think people are impulsive, but deep down, every Jew is good. And in the last and final moments, the only thing that they wanted to do, they recognized their father and they wanted to say, Shema Yisrael, we do teshuvah, Shema Yisrael. They were screaming it. The people in the street said 20 or 30 times they heard screaming from the car the words Shema Yisrael. So it gives us a little bit of an insight. It gives eloquent testimony to the eternal spark that lies dormant beneath the surface of every single Jew. We're all tzaddikim, the Ner Tamid. We're going to leave it over here, Rabbi Sai. We'll continue on.